So last time we saw the extent to which Chazal demand that we be above suspicion, always, under all circumstances, forever and ever and ever. So then, transitioning to the second half of this again, here, I said, today is less lumdus, maybe, as you're used to, but I want to show you how a halachic issue can be traced from the Gemara and how it morphs through time. Okay, that's the goal today. This is going to be halacha, and like I said, I heard this version of this at least first from Rabbi Clapper, and I looked back and found his Makaros, and I copied most of them as they were there because he, you know, does what I don't, which is, well, you can sort of see, right? Underline things and structure the sources in a way that phrases are broken up. So as long as I had it, okay. So remember, the Gemara says, despite all the attempts that we have in advance to make sure that no one ever doubts the integrity of the tzedakah collector, we don't want you to ask for an accounting afterwards because that isn't right, because we assume that they're tzaddikim. Right, now, what's the source for that idea? The Navi, thank you. Which... Yeah, so here's the story in number 4. Vahi bishnat esrim v'shalosh shana l'melech Yehoash. Lo chizku ha-kohanim et bedek habayit. So Yehoash wanted to strengthen the Beit HaMikdash, but the Kohanim are not doing it. So Vayikra Melech Yehoash lo Yehoyada ha-kohen. Ula Kohanim. Vayomar lehem, madua inchem mechazkim et bedek habayit, vatal tekul kesef meit rechem, ki lebedek habayit titnu. Said, why are you not supporting it? And if you're not going to use the money in the coffers to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, so don't touch the money because that's what it's for. It's meant for renovations of the Beit HaMikdash. So the Kohanim were honest, they just were not doing what they were supposed to. So what does the Pasuk tell you that they did? No, they didn't touch the money. They didn't ask anybody for money, and they didn't do any work. Right? Meaning, very simple, we won't collect money for the building campaign, right, for the renovations, if we're not going to renovate. Vayikach yoyada kohen aron echad. So Yoyada puts a like a box of sorts with one opening in it near the Mizbeach. So when people would come in, they could drop in money and it could go in easily but not easily out. I don't know if they did it like they do in, like, you know, museums where you put the quarter in and you get to watch it go around and around and around or whatever. I don't know exactly what they did. But he kiratam kirava kesef. It's pathetic that that's what they think they need to do to make you donate money. It's even more pathetic that they're probably right. But, you know, whatever. But he kiratam kirava kesef va'aron. Vayal sofer ha-melech va'koin ha-gadol. And when they would see that it was full, so the sofer would come, right? The Kohen Gadol, the king's scribe, and Adnu and Akesef. So then they take the money, etc. And then if you skip down, they wouldn't do any calculations. They wouldn't do an accounting because they were honest. Now it is interesting, as Ezra pointed out, that it's weird that we pick this story, because there is a lot of dereliction of duty here. Right? It's Dafka, not a story in which everybody is presumed to be doing what they're supposed to. Now, it happens to be true that everyone seems to be honest here. Right? Meaning, even when the people are not renovating, they just say, okay, we're not going to renovate, so we're not going to collect money. So, at least in that sense, there does seem to be honesty about the funds. But at any rate, that is the source for this. Okay. So the Gemara says we shouldn't demand an accounting. I want to read with you a passage in Shmot Rabbah, and I want you to tell me what this tells us about the sources that we've seen. Okay, this is a Midrash in Shmot Rabbah, commenting on this pasuk in Melachim. Alav ne'amar v'loi chashvun an Hashem ha'yisher yitnu et ha'kesef. So the Midrash says, "V'lo yichashvu zedoru shel Yoash shayosin memuna." They wouldn't calculate. That's Yoash's generation, because they were honest. So then the Midrash says, "Shanu rabotenu." The Midrash says that Misha haya nichnas lechomer alishka lo haya nichnas lo vivergot chavut v'lo van palya. Shein yashir yomu mitchuman alishka hashir shadam tarech letzei yidei briot kederech shu tarech letzei yidei makom shemar v'yitim nikim eshem v'Yisrael. Right, we've seen this before. Right, that the person who's going in to collect to deal with the money in the Beit Hamikdash, he wouldn't wear pockets, he wouldn't have cuffs, he wouldn't have long hair, he wouldn't have whatever. So now the Gemara, the Midrash says, but wait a second. Moshe haya gizbar latzmo amalech ha mishkan. Who was in charge of the funds for the Mishkan? Moshe. Aval bishaash amar leakadosh baruch hu l'Moshe sheyasu mishkan miyad vevo kolish. But when God said, "Make the Mishkan," what happened? Who gave money? Everyone. Very good. Lekama yavim eviyokol anidafa. So how long did it take to bring all of the donations? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, l'shnei b'karim eviyu v'hoter, shnei mar v'malachai tadayam. Within 2 mornings, the fundraiser was over plus. Right? This is every fundraiser's dream, right? You have a 48-hour window, and they were in the bonus round by a little after the beginning of the second morning. Okay? Nichnas Moshe Eitzel Bitzalel. So Moshe came to Bezalel, Ra'ashot Tirman HaMishkan. He said, "Oy vey, there's extra money. What will we do? We've raised extra funds. We are in surplus, not deficit." So Amar Lefanav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Olam, Asinam Melech HaMishkan, Votarnu, Manasseh Menotar. So he said, "God, what are we supposed to do with this extra money?" Amar Lo, Lech Vaseh Bahem Mishkan Loidut. So he goes and he said, "Make another tent." Fine. Halach Moshe Vaseh Bahem. So he made this extra thing. The Kevan Sheba Litain Cheshbon Amar Lahem Kach Vekach Yatzal Mishkan of Yeter Asiti Mishkan Laidut Teve Eile Pekudeh Mishkan Mishkan Haidut. And when Moshe did a wrap up for the people, he did an accounting. And he said, "I spent this much on the Mishkan, and what was extra, I spent on the Mishkan Haidut, that God said I should make, the extra structure." Okay. Now, what happened in this Midrash? And does it create any problems with what we've seen in the Gemara? Yes, thank you. Very simply. They did an accounting. Right, they did an accounting after they gathered the money in the Mishkan. And what did our Gemara say? You should not. So, does someone want to attempt to resolve this? Now, don't tell me honest versus not honest, because remember, the person here doing the accounting is Moshe. So that sort of negates the possibility. Okay, so how do we deal with this? Okay, right, so it could be that the Mishkan was different, right? Because it was a one-time donation, the building of the Mishkan, it's not like continuing expenses. So there, there's more chashad, because continuing expenses, so you have a surplus 1 year, you leave it over until the next year. So there's no reason to ask for an accounting, because there's a plausible explanation as to where the extra money went. It went in the bank account to pay for next year, because, who knew in 2019 what 2020 would look like. Yes. Honestly. Like, it's terrible. Yeah. I was totally with John Oliver, who has his end of year, you know, last show, just, you know, built a huge, like, 20-foot tall structure that said 2020 in a quarry in upstate New York, and then blew it up with many, 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 many things of like, dynamite, just to represent the way we all feel about 2020. Mamash, I wish we, well, not really. In Israel, that would definitely lead to a war. But fine. So one possibility is, look, it's a technicality. In a case where there's a plausible explanation, the funds are going somewhere, so great. But a one-time thing, you say you're raising money for a single task, so then you really got to explain yourself, right? If you say, I need $1 million to fix the, you know, the roof and the windows and the whatever, and then you have $1.1 million, so since you raised it for a specific purpose, people are going to want to know, so what did you do with the excess money? Okay, good, that's a very technical explanation. Now, but if you're right, Yaakov, what would that already tell us? Let's say you're right. It's a technical explanation, but it belies a very important conceptual point, which is that we're not opposed to accounting in principle, right? Meaning that would say that, look, anytime there is an actual concern, you should do an accounting. It's just, right? And that would already open up the door to say, well, in any case where there's more of a plausible concern, so then you should have an accounting. Okay, that's one possible distinction. What's another one? Andrew. Hi, Andrew. What's a possible distinction? The Gemara says you don't ask for an accounting from the people in charge of this, and yet the Midrash says that Moshe gave an accounting. What's the other possible? Okay, so putting it differently, meaning it could be that you can't demand it as a community, but the leader, as part of his, you know, commitment to transparency, to making sure that no one doubted him, can offer an accounting, right? The problem with demanding an accounting is that it implies a lack of trust. But for a leader to offer accountability, that's fine, maybe even encouraged, right? And it's a very fine line that we're trying to walk between not wanting to accuse people, but also wanting to be trustworthy. So one way of dealing that is with people being comfortable with offering accountability, even when not technically obligated. And that would be another way of sort of compromising these two values that we have, right? Of not calling people's integrity into question, but making sure that everyone knows that you're being honest. So now, what I want to show you is how this plays out lahalacha, right? Because yesterday we had some cynical comments, which I think correctly capture the history of Psak, okay? On this particular issue. So look at number 6. This is Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Okay, so number 6, Shulchan Aruch says, "Gabay tzedakah she'ein lamaniyim lechalek, mitzarfim ha'maot dinarim la'achirim, aval lo le'atzmam." The people, if they have money that they have a surplus and they have, you know, a lot of pennies, so they want to, you know, basically bring the pennies to the bank and store it either in the bank and store it in hundreds, so that it's easier. They're allowed to do that, but not if they take the money themselves. Because then people will be concerned that, you know, they're, trading in, they're taking 110 pennies on the dollar. Which maybe they should, but that's not the point, right? Meaning pennies are this disaster, that pennies at this point cost more to make than they're actually worth. They cost like 1.3 cents to make a penny, and the only reason we keep making pennies is because America apparently has a very powerful penny lobby. It's a busha vecherpa. What? Yes, I know. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. We have a... Yes, and they claim that it's not because they want to make the money of making the pennies. It's because of Lincoln. Right, that makes sense, because Lincoln isn't also commemorated on something which is worth 500 times the penny, right? No, 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 we need him on the penny. But in Israel, we got rid of our smallest coin, right? We no longer make 5 agarot, because they're worthless. And no one really uses 10 agarot either. I mean, every time I get 10 agarot, I really have no idea what to do with it, right? You just store it up eventually to, I don't know, throw it in the museum thing and watch it go around and around. I don't know. You know, like, what else do you do with 10 agarot coins?
Yeah, they're helpful for giving
to the... And they don't want 10 agarot either! What are they going to do with 10 agarot? What? If you give them a bag full of 10 agarot, they can... Okay, if you give them a bag full of 10 agarot, either they can go buy food with it, or they can use it to bang someone over the head and rob them. But, like, you know, it's not really that helpful. Come on. I'm not endorsing that, if that wasn't clear. I'm just saying, in theory, what could be done with it. So, Shulchan Aruch says, if you have to sell the surplus, sell it to others, but not to yourself. And you don't force them to make an accounting. Below the hektish and megiz barim, right? Not in staka, not in hektish. Shneimar v'lo chashvun anshemers. You know what? Kesev ayadam latet lo sem elacha ki beina beemunai mosim. The Rama writes, umikom makom kidei shiyu nikim Hashem Yisrael tov lahem lidein cheshbon. Now this is presumably, as the Bach argues, motivated by the Midrash. The Rama says, first of all, but it's better for you to offer of your own accord, right, as in of your own volition, it's better for the tzedakah collector to offer an accounting. So that's the first attempt in halacha to deal with these two sources, which is to say, we can't force you because we don't want to call your integrity into question, but you should do it in order to establish your integrity. And then the Rama adds, V'chol ze begabaim aksherim. But this is only if they're honest. Avol mi she'eino kasher. But if he's not honest, Oshin nitmane ba'alimut v'chazaka, or someone who got appointed through violence and force, Tzarich liten cheshbon, he must provide an accounting. V'hu adin v'chol memunim ala tzibur. Now, tell me what is striking about this Rama. Yes, Rami. So it's, right, he seems to be in contradiction, and I want to highlight how much is he in contradiction, right? How much is this intention? He's in contradiction because, first of all, he says you can obligate the person, but what is he going to obligate the person? Yes, what's the problem? Why in the Gemara could you not do that? Yes, because you're supposed to assume they're trustworthy. The Rama is taking it as a given that you have some heads of staka foundations that are not trustworthy, which, you know, but as we saw, where might you think that an opening to this type of argumentation would come from? Maybe the Chamsover, but even earlier than that, we saw yesterday Tosfos, where Tosfos said, right, he already started acknowledging that there's varying levels of honesty. Now, I will point out, it's probably not a good idea, lechatchila, to appoint someone that you know is not trustworthy over lots and lots of money. That's probably not a good idea. Probably. Now, where does the Rama actually get this from? So the Rama gets it from the Mahari Vayil. So who is the Mahari Vayil? And his last name is? Weil. Or Vayil, because they don't have the W. But W-E-I-L or Vav Yud Yud Lamed. Vayil. Right? Weil. Right? Okay, so who is he?
He is German 15th century.
Very good. He's German 15th century and one of the most important Ashkenazi late Rishonim, early Achronim. Right? Like, this is one of those Sfarim that when the Ramah says that he's going to balance out Sfardi Psak with Ashkenazi Psak, Ma'arivayel is right up there in his top three. Right? Ma'aril, Ma'arivayel. Right? These people are like who he's balancing Sfardi Psak with. Okay? This is late. These are like the collectors of the Minhagim post Marami Rutenberg. Yes? Well, the Ramah says he's writing the Ramah in part because the Shulchan Aruch followed Rambam Rif, and therefore everything is weighted towards the Sephardi poskim. And the Ramah wants to balance that out and say and write the Ashkenazi Psak. Right? And the Ma'arivayel is one of those key sources from which the Ramah derives Ashkenazi practice. So, if I asked you, in the Ramah, does the Ramah make it sound like it's a obligation when someone is not fully trustworthy to provide an accounting? What do you think, Yonatan? The Ramah. What? Not.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he says, tzarich. What does tzarich mean?
Obligation.
You must.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, he claims he's getting this from the Ma'arivayel. But let's see if he actually got it from the Ma'arivayel. So the Ma'arivayel says, this is Tshuva Kuf Ayin Gimel. Parnes shenitmana latzibur, va'achar esrim shana karu alav tagar. I am tzarech lasot cheshbon lekol echad ve'echad. This is not quite an unhappy case. What happened? Someone was in charge of the tzedakah organization for 20 years, and then after 20 years, they accused him of... Yeah, they accused him of not being so honest. So he was asked, does he now have to go back and personally account with every single person who ever donated in 20 years to the Tzedakah Fund? So he says, first of all, Hadat Machraat im nitmana latzibur shebeiru otan liot parnas mi da'atam az ein tzarech lasot cheshbon keiva dihimnu alayu. He said, I think you don't have to, because since you appointed him, you trusted him. So first of all, Ma'arivayel adds something, and he says, when we say that we trust the leaders, what does it mean? What does Ma'arivayel seem to think that means? Not just that, oh, they are honest, but more importantly, right, that's one level, but the Ma'arivayel adds a level. What is it? Yes, that by appointing them, you're declaring your trust in them, and that's part of why it's problematic to now demand an accounting, because you trusted them. You chose them. I hope you are healthy. And then he's smach ledavar. He says, where do we see support from this? From an aputrapus, from new bet, you know, avi yitomim, and zarchlatsud cheshbon, that an aputrapus, which you said is a funny word. Yes, it is a funny word. It is from Greek. Right, it is not surprisingly in case this sounded biblical Hebrew to you, right? It is not. It is Greek. What? Apotropos is a word in the Gemara, but it's from Greek. It means, so if you have an orphan, so either the father or the Beit Din can appoint what? What did you say, Rami?
Trust fund, right?
Yeah, I mean, someone in charge of the trust fund. Yeah, an executor of the will, of whatever. And in general, we don't force them to make a cheshbon because we say you trusted them and no one's going to want to take this job if you're going to be constantly doubting their integrity. Okay. Now, the Ma'arivayel now makes his first move. Since he thinks that part of the trust is not just intrinsic to being a leader, but because they were chosen... So then he says, first type of leader that doesn't get that trust is? We already saw the Ramah, but, right, which is someone who took the position by force. Right, meaning if the reason you don't have to do an accounting is because there's a presumption that people trusted you because they chose you, if they didn't choose you, instead you pushed yourself in by force, so there's no reason to assume they trusted you. So he says, "Aval imlonid manabi daratzi burali deyasra bechazaka valimud." If you were pushed in either by the government or by force. Like everyone is afraid of you. No, right? You're too powerful, and no one can ever challenge you. So obviously, then, what do you need to do? Provide an accounting, right? So the first thing that he says is, if the trust isn't intrinsic, but it comes because people trusted you. Then if they didn't and you got in there without the choice of the people, then you must provide an accounting. Case one. Va'afilu im netmana midat hatzibur uvirtzonam. And even if you were appointed by the community, im korim alav tagar shlonoika shura v'choshin otosha shalach yad b'mamona tzibur shalokidin b'davar. But if people are accusing you of having misused the communal funds, she'ra'ui listapek bo lefi ra'ot einei adayan, in such a way that a reasonable person could suspect you of wrongdoing, as pshita she'tzarech lasot cheshbo. So then you should do a cheshbon. And skipping down, he says, "V'acheshbon lo yasav nekol ma'arer alav." Diadua hu shekama dvarim shetzvichim lotzi mamon atzibur she'ein legalot ela latznuim. And he says, but you don't make an accounting for every possible case, because there are certain things the community does that no one is allowed to know about. Yonatan is staring at me. Okay, good. Yonatan, why are you staring at me? What does that mean? What do you think it means? What? Well, what do you think that means? Oh, yeah, okay, well, give me an example.
If money was being diverted to, like, something which you maybe felt was unnecessary,
but actually unnecessary. Okay, so let's put it this way. There was an article many, like 20, 30 years ago, maybe. Almost, yeah, 25 years ago, maybe, in the Journal of Contemporary Halacha by Stephen Oppenheimer, who I think is like an optometrist or something, on journalism and halacha. So there he claims that the reason that you don't do it is because it might embarrass the poor people if they knew exactly where the money's going to. That doesn't seem likely in the Ma'arival. There is a more likely explanation, and that is that where'd the money go to? Bribes. Bribes. Because the way that the Jews survived in Galus often was bribes. But you don't want people to know that. Like, it's necessary. You don't have a choice. Right? And not like bribes. I mean, not bribes within the Jewish community. Meaning, the Jewish community sometimes had to bribe the secular officials to keep them safe. But the way that worked was it was off the books. Right? Was that you didn't tell everybody that you were bribing them. Right? That was just the way, you know, a few years ago, When I was in yeshiva, I went to Poland. But the year after that, the group went to Poland and Ukraine. And when they went to Ukraine, they just told you in advance, you have to just pack cash for bribes, because that is the way things work in Ukraine. Like, you just, in order to get over the border, you are going to need to bribe the guards. They aren't paid enough. Right? The government doesn't pay them enough, on the expectation that they'll get the remainder of their salary, right? Like restaurants, they'll let their waiters get money from tips. In certain countries, the reality is just you make the remainder of your salary off bribes, right? And the kahava, that is what they did. You just have to bribe people. You know, I have found out from one of my friends, though, that the key in Israel to getting things done in the bureaucracy is to speak Russian. That is the key. I have a friend whose parents are Russian. So when he was here, he said like a lot of the the bureaucrats, at least in that particular, I don't think this is in general, but we're Russian, and they didn't, bureaucrats in Israel are notoriously not helpful. But apparently, if you spoke to them in Russian instead of in Hebrew or in English or whatever you were trying to speak to them, then they were more amenable. Who knows? But that's probably what the Marivyal is talking about, is more bribes. And then what you should do is basically, in such a case where there are certain things that can't be public, what you do is you pick middlemen, right? Like the community picks certain people who can be privy to the information to do an accounting. So it's not fully public, but there's somebody besides for the tzedakah collector who was in charge. Now, in the Marivyal, is the Ramah 100% quoting the Marivyal accurately? He claims he is, and he almost is. Except, what's really happening is basically, I think, that each generation is tweaking this a little bit because they recognize that the Gemara is presenting an ideal, right, that you shouldn't have to require an accounting, but the utmost value in the Gemara is transparency. So if you can accomplish transparency without accounting, which doesn't call people's integrity into question, great. If you can't, so then accounting is a reasonable tool to use. But in each generation, I think the poskim are reacting to the reality on the ground. So you already had Tosfot who said, well, they were tzaddikim, and the Gemara maybe they were less tzaddikim, but still enough that they didn't need an accounting. The Marivyal says there are two types of people I would tell you who need accounting. People who push their ways in by force, or simply people who the tzibur didn't want. Because then they weren't granted trust by the community. But the Ramah takes it one step farther. What does the Ramah say? Misha eino kasher. Someone who isn't honest. But what's the problem? What is the Ramah adding the Marivyal isn't? Marivyal assumes that if someone was appointed, then what? What? That he's trustworthy. And when does he say they're not trustworthy? Only if somebody was appointed by the tzibur and people accuse him. And there's, objectively speaking, suspicious activity going on that any reasonable people might be suspicious. So then, bending over backwards, then I can tell you you should do an accounting. Right? But if it's just someone who's not like super trustworthy or whatever, and there's not particularly a reason to accuse them, there's not like a very sketchy thing going on, so then Marivyal doesn't talk about that. What does the Ramah do? He formalizes it. But what is, by formalizing the way he does, what does the Ramah essentially do? He basically formalizes Yaakov's comment yesterday, which is, I mean, that's very nice in the time of the Gemara. But if you don't trust your leaders that way, then you don't trust them. And then you need an accounting. Meaning, instead of looking at the Gemara as the hard and fast halacha, which is, you should be transparent such that you don't require accounting, and therefore it's forbidden to require an accounting, the post can look at it as an ideal that we strive for. But really, the real value is trust and transparency. Right? Not requiring that through accounting is a utopian ideal, but you have the head on your shoulders when you apply it. So one way of doing that is saying, but people should ideally offer to do an accounting. The other is to say, if you have a leader that seems not to fit the model of the Gemara, which for the Marivyal is either someone who came in by force or someone who did something that clearly is objectively suspect, and the Ramah goes even farther and he says, or someone you just don't really trust, then you've got to provide an accounting. Which means that as the poskim go on, generation by generation, right, they view these two Gemaras not as hard and fast halacha, but as in ideal, but they recognize that because the ultimate, right, the number one rule is make sure that people are trusted, we're willing to sacrifice on our opposition to accounting and the suspicion that is implied with it if that's the only way to accomplish the meta goal of the Gemara. And therefore, in each generation, what you see is the Marivayel, the Ramah, slightly tweaking it to the reality in front of them. Because basically, you got from the Gemara where they said, assume that all leaders are honest, to the Ramah who says, if you don't think your leader is honest, then demand an accounting. Right? Which is really the Ramah's just way of saying, look, the Gemara was predicated on Kib Emunahim Osim. But if I don't believe that, and I plausibly don't believe that, so then I can't just say, oh, I don't have to have an accounting because Kib Emunahim Osim. They're not Emunahim Osim, so I need an accounting. And it's an interesting case of Psak, where the Gemara clearly has one model, and the Poskim have no problem. They don't see themselves as contradicting the Gemara. Right? They see themselves working within the balance of values in the Gemara. They just think that the reality in front of them requires a recalibration. Right? And that's what I think is fascinating halachically about this sugya, is that the Poskim end up saying basically the exact opposite of the Gemara. But they don't think that it's a contradiction. Right? They actually think that it's a natural extension of the Gemara, which is, the Gemara in a utopian world thinks that you just need to be transparent prophylactically. And therefore you never need post-facto accounting, because that implies you don't trust them. Marivayel says, well, that's only if the leader came in honestly. Or with the vote of the people, but if he didn't, they might not trust you. So then you really should do an accounting. You have to. And if you're doing something that's suspect, you need to do accounting. The Ramah says, and if you just think they're not honest, then do an accounting. Because he's saying, that was for then, right? But the ultimate value is to make sure that there's honesty and trust in political institutions. And if that means the opposite of what it meant in time of the Gemara, so be it. And sometimes you have this in the Gemara, right? This is, right? But again, what's amazing to me is that they never say, we're saying the opposite of the Gemara. What they say is, the Gemara was for that Metziut, and we're talking about a different reality. And therefore, the same values that drove the Gemara to require prophylactic transparency without accounting, drive us to require accounting. And this is an extension of the Gemara, not an undermining of it. Right? It's not a subversion. It's a channeling of the meta picture of the Gemara. That's how the Poskim seem to imagine what they're doing. Right? And this is important. Okay, let's step out for a second and just note that this model in Psak is very important. I'll give you another example of this, okay? The Gemara says that, at least as it's understood, l'halacha, you are not allowed to give food to somebody who's not going to make a bracha because it's lifnei iver. Because you're giving them food and now they're going to eat without a bracha. So, how many people have in their lives not given food to somebody, or had someone in their house not going to make bracha and therefore refused to let them eat? Don't do it. Bad idea. Right? Don't do this. Why not? So Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach has this tshuva, Chelek Aleph Tshuva Lamed Hei, and he says, I think you should give them food, but not because I think that we need to make an exception to the Gemara. I think that the Gemara would tell you that for the same reason it once said don't give him food, now it would say give him food. Why? Because the principle of the Gemara is not don't give him food. What's the principle? Lifnei Iver. In a world where everyone is fundamentally Shomer Torah Mitzvot, or just not, but there aren't other ideologies, and there aren't whatever, right? It's you either keep Torah or you don't. So then, if you're not going to make a bracha, you are derelict in your responsibilities, so we're not going to give you food. And then maybe you'll start making a bracha. But in the modern world, different denominations and everything that exists, what's going to happen if you don't give someone who's not Orthodox food? What? Cancer? What? B'chil Hashem, yes. And he'll end up hating religious Jews. And it'll drive him farther away from halacha. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, if you don't give him food, it'll be lifnei iver. And he says, I'm not undermining the Gemara. The real principle wasn't, don't give him food if he's not going to make a bracha. The real principle was, lifnei iver, was draw him closer and not away from, and don't drive him away from halacha. In the reality of the Gemara, that meant don't give him food, because that'll encourage him to make a bracha. In the modern circumstance, he's not going to make a bracha one way or the other. But if you don't give him food, he'll end up hating Torah. And he'll be driven farther away from Torah Judaism. And sometimes, right, the creativity in poskim is not how they read the sugya, it's how they read mitzius. Right, it's how they read the reality. Right, they reread reality such that they end up with a practical chiddush, even if it's not a conceptual one. And that seems to be what's happening here. But now, watch how this gets even more extreme. Because the Marivayel said, do you have to make an accounting to everybody? No, Yidavka said, you don't have to make an accounting to everybody, only if there's reasonable suspicion. Look at the Shach. By the time you get to the Shach, how does he quote this halacha? Also claiming this is from the Marivayel, right? The Marivayel had said that if there's suspicion, so then you have to make an accounting, but not to every single person who makes a claim against you. And what does the Shach now say? If there's suspicion against you, then you need to make an accounting against every claim made against you, right? So in each generation, they're pushing this just a little bit farther in terms of how much accountability we're actually going to demand. Okay. Now, if you look at number 9 in the Pesachei Teshuvah, he quotes the Chasam Sofer, who I think nicely puts why it is that, despite all of this, ideally we wouldn't demand an accounting. And he writes that Odot Echad Sheparnes HaKila Al Pi HaMelech V'Hotzi Oto L'Tzarchei Tzibur. Someone was appointed to be in charge of the community by the king. V'Ata Achar Zman Rav Shekvar Yored Mi Mitmanot Shelo. And after he's already, right, retired, years later, they now they come and they start demanding money from him and claiming that there were funds that he didn't use. And the posek who was asked about this said, since no one asked him when he retired, so after many years, and he legitimately doesn't remember, Eino Ne'eman, Afilo B'Shvu Lo Yitol, they can't take money even if they swear. And what does the Chasam Sofer say? Hey Shif Ki Yafed Dan V'Yafed Hori, you're right. Dimlokin, Lo Shavak Techai, Lo Shavak Techai, Kol Mi She'ozek Motzi Otzar, Al Nirchle Chavero Pamach, Atshuv, Lo Yim B'Tvenu V'Yotzi M'Menu B'Shvuato. He says, you're right, because if you were to let people, no matter how many years have passed, start making claims, then no one can ever live. Right, at some level, right, too obsessively demanding accounting with no limitations just makes life impossible, right? Because you're constantly looking over your shoulder. And then he says, if you turn to the next page, and he says, by a gabbai tzaka, it's more than that. We're worried that if we don't trust them, what's going to happen? Batam nearly after shari motzien otzad bershut amrina mishtabei. If you would even make them swear that they were being honest, what would they end up doing? They just wouldn't, it's not worth it. Right? So here's one of those balancing factors, right? One was you already trusted them. The Chasam Sofer adds two more balancing reasons why your primary mode of enforcing transparency shouldn't only be accounting and shvuot, which is, one is at some point after time has passed, it's just impossible. And the second is, if you doubt people too much, it's not worth their time. Right? It's not worth their time. And this is a real concern. Right? There are people, you know, again, I don't want to weigh in on right, wrong, whatever, but there are definitely people who don't, who I've heard, who don't enter into, let's say, chinuch, or they don't enter into a position of leadership because they say, the society is too litigious. Everything becomes a fight. If I cross anybody, right, then they're going to threaten to sue me, right? If I, right, and there are people, rightly or wrongly, who are so scared of the, of being falsely accused of some sort of sexual inappropriate act because they said, I don't know what the lines are anymore, right? Again, right or wrong, right? There are people I know who didn't go into chinuch, but they said, look, right, you know, if, whatever, right, I play basketball with my students, right, who knows if in, you know, at some point someone will accuse me of that being inappropriate, right? Now, you can say that it's called for all of our, you know, and again, I don't want to quiet anybody, right, if they've been, that's not what I'm saying. But my point is that a litigious society can scare people, right? And you have to balance it. Now, you might say that demanding accounting and constantly looking out for the victim is good because it'll protect victims, and that's true. But you have to remember there's always a cost, right? Because in the end of the day, if people are more ready to accuse religious leaders or people in charge of charity of misuse of funds or acting in an inappropriate way, right? And the person can equally be a rabbi or a lawyer, and lawyers don't get accused in the same way, then they might just become a lawyer because it's not worth their time. Right? So there is a cost. And that's what the Chasam Sofer is pointing out, is that if you can make people, right, 20 years after the fact, provide an accounting, and you can constantly make them swear every time you don't like what's going on, at some point people are just going to quit and they're going to say, forget it, it's not worth my time. And therefore, halacha is trying to carefully balance between, on the one hand, making sure that everything is honest and above board and appropriate, but on the other hand, not being so, right, suspecting of anybody in a leadership position that no one ever wants to be in a leadership position because it's not worth their time. They don't want to live under a cloud of fear. Right? And that seems to be the very careful balance of the Gemara and the later postgam are trying to meet. Okay. The Chasam Sofer just has another case where there was actually a problem in the books. The books seemed cooked, right? So there he just says, obviously, if the books seem cooked, in that case, Yesh Lomar Anan Sadeh Shadadach Lom Nu Oto Akal Aleihem. In that case, no one ever, right? Obviously, we know that you didn't accept to not challenge someone if it seems like they were being dishonest, right? That seems obvious to him. Now, the Noda B'Yehuda, I'll just wrap this up, he argues that even in cases when you do have an accounting for the Gabbai Tzedaka, and the underlying part, he says, he says, even when you're doing it, it could be that the way you do it will be different. It won't be on every single detail, right? It doesn't have to account for every cent, right? Because, and again, that may be part of what the Marivayel was talking about, right? Was that certain things have to be done in private. And that's what he quotes from the Shach. Now, We basically come completely full circle, though, and go all the way to the We go all the way to the opposite direction of the Gemara in the Aruch HaShulchan. So if you look at 11, the Aruch HaShulchan just says, I have your number one solution here. And look at the underlying part, and he says, V'lochein, v'adai im kishit manum mitmanum shiitnu cheshbon, v'adai she'chavim litin cheshbon, k'amun shigenem in hag. He said, what was the logic of the Mari file? Why don't you normally need an accounting? Because the people trusted you. But what if when they hired you on condition that you'll provide an accounting? So then what? You would have to. And he says, and he says, not only is it obvious that if you're hired on condition that you'll make an accounting, that you have to, he adds, that's the minhag. Right? By the time you got the Aruch HaShulchan in the late 19th, early 20th century, we'd gone 180 degrees from assuming that you should trust people to the Marivayel, the Ramah, saying if there's a reason not to trust them, either because they got in by force or because there's an actual problem, so then you need an accounting, but normally maybe you still don't. To the Aruch HaShulchan saying the minhag is that when you hire someone, you make it clear that they are not the type of leader that you trust without an accounting. They must make an accounting. And if you do that, so it's clear that you didn't trust them, and therefore that's it. And he says, for sure, if they take a salary. Right? He says, if they take a salary, then it is a total given that when someone is paid a salary, so they're responsible to provide an accounting. If someone's a volunteer, so that's one thing. But if you're hiring them, so then all the concerns that we're worried about, that they won't go into the profession, whatever, if they agree to the job and they take the salary, so then you're allowed to, though he notes, not lefnei kol ma'arer, right? Not anybody who challenges them, because dimkein ein ledavar sof. Okay, so let me just summarize what we've seen. Right, as we noted, right, there's this tension in the Gemara. Then on the one hand, the Gemara thinks that you should, in advance, prophylactically, be totally transparent, but ideally you shouldn't want an accounting. Why not? So, either because it calls their integrity into question, or, as the Chassam Sofer said, it makes people's lives unbearable, it drives them away from the profession. So, there are two ways of really looking at the Gemara. Either the Gemara is saying, providing an accounting is really not a good thing, right? We don't want that. Or it's saying, look, our major ideal is that people should be honest and transparent. Ideally, we won't have to do that through an accounting. But we're not in principle against it if that's what it takes. And the poskim seem to take the latter one. And that's why in each generation, you see that they tweak it. And Mari Vail says, if someone was appointed by the government or by force, and therefore there's no reason to believe that you trusted him, he needs to provide an accounting. And if something seems dishonest, he needs an accounting. The Ramah takes it even a step further. If someone's just general, you don't think they're trustworthy, they need an accounting. And then the Aruch HaShulchan goes all the way to the other extreme, and he says, nowadays, the minhag is that when you appoint someone, you make it clear that maybe in the time of the Gemara, that the way that we enforced honesty was not through accounting, but now it is. And as long as you make that clear, so then you made it clear, and if someone takes a salary, then that's just the way it's going to be. So you end up, for the exact same reasons that the Gemara was opposed to it, by the time you get to the Aruch HaShulchan, the norm is that you demand an accounting. Right? And again, I think what this shows about this sugya is not a black and white sugya. This sugya is one which is trying to balance values, and recognizes, therefore, that as reality changes, the balance of the factors has to be a different. And again, the last piece of evidence that the poskim invoke is the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, where you see that you may not demand an accounting, but from Moshe you learn that it might be the right thing to volunteer to have an accounting, which already shows you that an accounting is a mechanism that Halacha believes can add credibility. It may not be that we demand it, but it definitely is something in our toolbox, which makes it all the more likely that when necessary, we will invoke it as a rule. Okay? So, like I said, the point of this year was less lumdus and more to show you the way poskim can take the values in the sugya and retranslate them as the reality changes, that the same values that lead to X might lead to not X by the time you get to the end, right? And that's what we really saw, right? That you go from the Gemara saying, don't have an accounting, to the Aruch HaShulchan, who says that the minhag is, whenever you appoint anyone nowadays, you tell them in advance they're going to need to have an accounting. And even though it seems like the Gemara went 180 degrees, at the end of the day, I think it's really evidence of sometimes that things can end up in opposite practical implications, but really it's just a calibration of the values that are already inherent in the Gemara itself. Okay, so I wanted to see this sugya just because it is an example of sometimes how psak works, right? Where psak tries to figure out what the right, whether we're dealing with rules or guiding principles, and based on how that is, they'll be affected by changing realities in different ways. In this case, because it seems to be a balance, right, a judgment call of how to balance these different values, it can end up that by the time you get to the 19th, 20th century, the poskim are literally demanding the exact opposite of what happened in the Gemara, and yet it still doesn't feel inauthentic to the sugya, because it still seems like they're balancing the same type of cheshbonot, right? They all, like the sugya, they also care about not driving people crazy. And they're, but instead of saying, therefore you don't need an accounting, they say you don't need frivolous accounting, right? You don't need an accounting every time someone accuses you. It has to be that there's, either you agreed to it, or it has to be that there's a particular reason why this needs to be accounted for, right? So they're trying to balance that in the sugya, right? They're trying to make people not feel untrusted, right? By saying, oh yeah, you agreed to it. That's why we're asking, right? Not just because, you know, you're a bad person, right? They're trying to balance the same values, but they recognize that sometimes those values look very, very different in practice. Okay? Fine.